And with me in the KRVS studios this afternoon, I'm really happy to say, are Don LeBlanc, who is an artist and owner of Gallery 549 in downtown Lafayette. This weekend is Second Saturday Art Walk, along with all kinds of other great cultural things happening in our community. As well with us is artist Dutch Kepler, who will be showing a collection of work at Gallery 549 opening this Saturday. In addition to the title of artist, Dutch, you are a retired professor from UL Lafayette from the Visual Arts Department. And as we were saying just before we started with the interview, you have trained, mentored, inspired generations of both artists and graphic artists and advertising people here in Lafayette. And it never fails when a young artist, graphic artist comes to Lafayette, to KRVS. They've been trained by you somehow and are a product of your great artistry and mentoring. So I'm really glad to have both of y'all here. Gallery 549 has been this wonderful space for so many artists. You've offered the space for group exhibits, for solo exhibits like Dutch's. And tell us about why you opened the gallery. Was it? I know you're an artist as well, and you have shown some of your work there, but you really have just nurtured so many artists along the way.
Well, we tried. In fact, October 1st was our 14th anniversary at that location for Gallery 549. To answer your question, originally I had in mind to open a space which would allow me to show my work initially, and at the same time it was evident that there was a need to have a location that would foster younger artists and allow them to show their work initially and most often for the first time anywhere. So it's a way of allowing someone starting out to see their work in an exhibition, see it alongside other individuals' works, get a sense of what the audience response will be, make decisions about what to do in the future, if that work is appropriate, if it's satisfying, if it's viable in any way, then they can make those decisions based on what they see in real time within the exhibition. And we do that in a way to this day by having at least two or perhaps three exhibitions per year in which we introduce new artists. And at that time, we may have 8 out of 10 young people showing for the first time, and not necessarily young folks that are just identifying themselves as visual artists at an age and a time in their life when they've never shown, but they've gone through some other career and are just beginning to show their work for the first time. So it's a great opportunity, as you know, as I mentioned, to introduce new work and these new artists to the audience.
And also a great space for works by artists like Dutch. I know you've had many solo shows of artists who have quite a body of work, and it's rare for us to be able to see so many paintings in one space, so many works in one space, in such an intimate gallery. It feels very, you feel very close to the works in your gallery, and I know so many people appreciate that with works like Dutch and many others that you've shown there as well. When did you first encounter Dutch's work?
Well, I was, in fact, a student at USL at the time in the 70s. I was a student there from 73 to 79. I was a visual arts major, but, in fact, I had many conversations with Dutch throughout my time there. Did not major or study directly with him, majored in any of the programs that he was responsible for, but his influence was great, and you know, not only within his realm or his scope, but throughout the department, throughout the building, in fact. So at the time, I was interested in design. I wasn't sure what to do. I was a young student. He suggested I major in both applied arts or applied design, graphic arts, and visual arts, fine arts at the time. So I didn't quite go with that, but in fact, that was one of the first memories I have, first recollections of a conversation with Dutch. And then so I was aware of his painting at the time, and over the years I've watched it develop. And at a time when he and I first began a conversation several years ago about an exhibition to focus on his work was extraordinary and still is to me. And I didn't hesitate to find time to place this work on the schedule.
Well, let's talk about your work, Dutch. This before we talk about this particular exhibit, which is called Head Trips, let's take you back maybe to the 70s. Did you start at UL, teaching at UL in the 70s?
I was in Dallas in an advertising agency right out of school. basically, no master's degree. And having gone to North Texas State in Denton, I was part of the student club there for that degree. And the man who had the program at USL was up there visiting. And it was during a period when I was talking to these students about having worked in Dallas, the things that they needed to know but didn't learn in school was my mm-hmm. topic. So this man from USL told me he thought I'd make a good teacher at the end of that, and I never thought about it again. I went back to my office, and a few weeks later I got a phone call from USL saying, I've been recommended to take this man's place, and would I come down for an interview? Well, I did, and I took the job. I was 23 years old, and I told him if I take this job, it's so I can afford to be a painter. I was very blunt about that. Well, I did a lot of graphic design and advertising on the side, and had some success in shows. You know, it was the ego thing. Everybody does that. And at the same time, kept painting, kept showing, and counting the days, you know, that ended up 33 years later that I retired. And yeah. Although I should say in the middle of that period, not the middle, having taught 3 years without a master's, they had told me when they hired me, if I liked teaching and wanted to stay, I would have to get a master's. So I took a sabbatical, went to Florida State, got an MFA, studied a lot of painting there with Carl Zerbe, and came back and revamped the program. And, you know, at the time, I was still younger than a lot of my students who had come back from
Vietnam. It's just so startling to hear you say you were 23. Yeah.
These guys came back on the VA bill. I think that's what you call it. And they were married and had children, and I was just this punk, you know, but they did what I told them, and that's the beginning of it.
Well, you know, it's nice to hear someone like your student talk, because your version of it, to say that you were just counting the days and you just were a punk, obviously that was not the effect you were having on your students, that you were having a deep, great effect on them, both in your advice to them and your example to them. So you were both a graphic artist and a painter. When you were an undergraduate, what did you focus on? Where did your training in graphic arts come from?
Well, again, at North Texas State, it wasn't North Texas University. In fact, I was in the first class that switched from North Texas State College to North Texas State University, NTSU. And my mother told me, you should major in commercial art so you can take care of yourself. And my whole – this was actually from an interview the Independent did a while back. Lady named Emily Hennigan was one of their interns, and she interviewed me for my show at Donald's. Everybody calls Gallery 549 Donald's. You know, just preface that. But
I'll have to start doing that.
That was for my show Earth Spears, which is kind of a protest after the BP oil spill. And I don't know, it was just this really emotional thing for me. I had quit doing any kind of freelance graphic design way back, you know, and all I was thinking about was being retired and doing the kind of work I wanted to do. And the thing I remember, while at North Texas State, I wanted to enter the student art show this year when I was a junior. And I went to the painting teacher, and I showed him a painting I had done, and I explained that because I wasn't a fine arts major, they weren't going to let me enter the show. And so he stood up for me and said, that painting's easily good enough, and it won first prize.
So while you were studying commercial art in order to support yourself, you were wowing the judges with your painting as well.
That really got me going.
Yeah. Well, where did you get that love of painting?
Oh, it started off in my family. My grandfather's younger brother, they called Uncle Cliff, was a painter who lived in the mountains with a dog 6 months out of the year and painted landscapes. And then he would come to town when the winter was too rough and you had a little frame shop, and his clients were people like Rudy Valley, for example. You know? And so I kept hearing about Uncle Cliff, you know, the painter, and he did this, he did that. And then after I started talking about being in college, my family, and I include my grandmother, my aunt, these people in Missouri where I was born, would say, you don't want to end up like your Uncle Cliff because he couldn't take care of himself. He was a fine artist. He didn't make enough money. He died very young in a hospital. And my grandfather used to bail him out, you know, not from jail, but, you know, help him out financially so he could, I guess you'd say, get a grubstake to go back to the mountains and paint. Free spirit kind of man. Mm-hmm. So I had that looming in my background.
But you never met him.
No, mm-hmm. No. I wish I had, but...
And that was your father's family or your mother's?
My mother's family. My father's family. My grandfather, Kepler, lived in the mountains in Pennsylvania on the Susquehanna River, and he was the county constable, but a blacksmith for the railroad at the same time. And my dad was the oldest of 10 kids, and so they had a water pump in the kitchen floor. She literally pumped by hand to get the water. And then an outhouse that she'd go out to. We would go there for deer season in the winter. You'd have to walk through the snow to the outhouse. You know, I was a little kid. And there'd be a deer hanging from a tree right outside the door. You know? Very romantic.
But no artist there doing still lifes of
the hanging deer. Although his youngest brother, Tommy, was my uncle, but I was older than him. He taught me how to tie trout flies because they would fish with fly rods and all that. So I grew up loving all that stuff, and it was a great family to come from. My mother's side were academics, and I was born in Kirksville, Missouri, where they have the College of Osteopathy and Surgery. My granddad was a dean of that school, and his health required him to move a lot, trying to find a drier climate. And so he ended up going to Ruidoso, New Mexico, where he had a drugstore. And it was on the Indian reservation for the Mescalero Apaches. And so I remember those Indians coming in there in the middle of winter eating ice cream. They all came in for ice cream.
So funny. You would go visit him in New Mexico at his pharmacy.
I lived there with him.
You lived there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My mother, in the meantime, had gone down to Roswell to teach school. And eventually she met Kepler. My name was changed in court. You know, I was adopted when I was 4. And so I've always been a Kepler. I didn't care about that other stuff, you know. And the shows, the way they line up, the Earth Spears was a protest image of drilling into the earth. And so the BP show was called Earth Spears.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just as you're describing this life, and I want to tell people who may just be tuning in, finding themselves fascinated by your descriptions, my guests are Don LeBlanc, Gallery 549, and Dutch Kepler, whose exhibit called Head Trips is opening this Saturday. Just the description of these different places where you grew up and your family lived and where they were born. And I can only imagine images flashing in our listeners' heads just like they were in mine, and thinking about how I've seen some of this incorporated in your work, the fishing that you're talking about and just the symbols that you're mentioning. So let's talk just a bit about that, kind of the unfolding of your interest in painting. What did you first start painting? What do you remember?
Well, I brought some slides.
That's great for radio.
I started painting on the floor of my parents' garage when I was in high school, on cardboard with whatever kind of paint I could find. I didn't know the difference, didn't care. And so by the time I went to North Texas State in 61, I would just buy art supplies. I worked in the cafeteria, and I'd buy art supplies with whatever money I had and turn over some paintings, and then I'd sell the paintings. We had rented an old house, and the living room was called the ABC Gallery, which meant American Bohemian Club. And so we had a clientele of doctors and dentists and whatever that would come over because they knew they could get something cheap. I was selling paintings for $35 to $50 to pay my way through school.
And what were those? What were the themes, the images in those paintings?
They were all over the place. A lot of it was not objective, what we would have called abstract expressionism at the time. Willem de Kooning to this day is still my all-time favorite, you know. But I was heavily influenced by the North Texas State jazz lab bands, and that's the people I hung out with mostly. There were all these guys that came from all over the country to major in jazz. And so I would follow them around and shoot their pictures. In fact, I did the photography for the Notre Dame Jazz Festival one year for the students from North Texas. And then when they would do a concert, I'd hitchhike to it. You know, I would hitchhike to see everybody, like Stan Kenton, Dave Brubeck, all those people.
Well, and people listening who know you know just how much music means to you. And you are a drummer. But
yes,
I was
a drummer.
You will be again someday when that hand heals.
No, it's my ears.
Well, you and I know people have had the pleasure of hearing you and people that you've played with over the years. You mentioned as well that you had a program on KRVS that you did with some other musicians and artists, Billy Ware, Dickie Landry, and Rusty Main, and
yes.
You all did a jazz program here at KRVS. I'm sure some people are wondering if that found its way into your paintings as well, somehow. Was there something about your love of jazz that worked its way into the paintings?
Oh, yeah. It's the abstract expressionism is the key to it. And maybe a layman's way of saying that would be reacting to the moment, you know, in the moment, whatever, where you don't plan everything out and you just do what's necessary to keep it moving, keep it rolling, and you don't stop to think about it. You just do it. And so I paint that way quite often. And sometimes I might even, like, stop and look at everything and kind of plan out what I'm going to do. But then once I start, I don't think about it. I just do whatever I think has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my approach to playing drums, much to the chagrin of some of the people I played with. So I never studied music. And I didn't learn rudiments. I can't read music, none of that. But I would go to the local clubs and stand behind the speakers watching Danny Kimball play drums, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just, I learned from all those guys anything.
That must have been a completely different experience when you came here and began to hear the music around here and how people express themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So you mentioned abstract expressionism, and we are doing this without a slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
I know those of us miss those days of sitting in art history, just hearing people's voices tell us about the art and getting to see them. But obviously, your paintings do have some shape and form. You mentioned fishing, and many people who know your work know that that has worked its way into some of your paintings as well. You mentioned work that was a response to the BP oil spill. So they're definitely symbols and themes that have changed and developed over the years and that have found their way into your paintings. Is there a period that you particularly enjoyed the most painting?
I would say this last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all feeding the next year and the next show. And,
mm-hmm. Well, this exhibit is called Head Trips.
Yes.
Describe that experience this past year of these paintings.
Let me go back to Earth Spears was the BP show. In that interview, the intern said, "What are all these circles for?" Because I had done a lot of swirly kind of movements with the brush. And I said, I can't tell you. But then in the next few months of working on the second show, this is like a trilogy of Earth Spears, Roswell Roots was the middle, and now Head Trips is kind of like the third one. I kept looking at the swirling strokes in the paintings, and I decided they were UFOs. And I called my aunt in Missouri. My mother has passed on, but my aunt said, you definitely lived in Roswell during the UFO thing. I was there. I was 4 years old.
That's where your grandfather had his pharmacy.
Yeah, he was up in Ruidoso, and I was down in Roswell with my mother at the time. I had, you know, been back and forth between both places, but she said, you definitely were there. And so I thought, well, what fun. I'm doing these swirling things anyway, so I'll just do a show about the UFOs. And then I called it Roswell Roots. And then in doing that, I started noticing how some of those paintings, for example, were called Space Cadets. And I had variations like Space Cadet Emeritus, retired space cadet. Trying to milk it as far as I could. But I realized how I was using heads in so many paintings, including the BP stuff. I was doing what I considered genetic mutation. So one of the paintings in the show that opens Saturday night is called Jenna Mutana for that, you know. And she has a head, you know. So I just kept looking at what needed to fill in the gaps and started still doing Space Cadets to some extent, but changing the titles so they were more appropriate with the latest
so
stuff.
Of these 34 pieces that we'll see at Don Donald's gallery, the Gallery 549 on Saturday, do many of them have recognizable heads, like in your last exhibit, or was how would you describe them?
Yeah, you could say two of them do.
Two of them. So there were representations of heads in the last one, but Head Trips here has turned into something
else.
Well,
Head Trips is that, you know, weird place where it could just be something that I was imagining while I did a painting. Mm-hmm. It's my own head trip. And then quite literally, let's say that almost every time someone would visit my studio or see one of my shows, they would say, oh, I see a head or I see a face. And I'd say, that's fine. You're allowed to see those, you know, whatever.
Fine.
And I just thought, almost as a joke, I'm going to start putting heads and paintings in these paintings where people can say, look, there's a head.
Yes.
And so they're all over the place.
Well, I can see that you had a good time with this last year making these paintings. And I'm going to ask Don to come in here for just a moment as an objective observer of some of the paintings. So, Don, these are 34 pieces by Dutch Kepler.
Yes.
You've known Dutch since the 70s. You were a student at UL. Tell us a bit about your feelings about these paintings and just help describe those of us who can't see them just yet.
Sure.
What we can expect to see.
Well, I suppose what would first impress you would be the density of the paintings. They're not simple. They're complex. They're layered with numerous layers of paint application. Some might say they're sort of chaotic and filled to a large degree with his imaginings. And yes, in fact, there are heads. You can see that there are recognizable forms. But I think for the most part, you will see that, like his jazz passions, his passions for music, you will have improvisation, you will have imaginary markings, compositions that defy explanation, really, and definition to ultimately be just a celebration of the medium and the sort of freedom that he brings to them, the fearlessness that he brings to the paint surface, and They're extraordinary, and I think the audience will be impressed.
Well, I was going to say, and then I realized it was kind of a pun, just looking at this wonderful mm-hmm. postcard here, that just looks like it's filled with joy.
Yes.
But that is the name of your wife as well.
Yeah.
Joy.
Yeah.
Joy Kepler. But it does, and it looks like you had a great time, and it looks like it's a joyous, I was going by the way Don had put it on the postcard.
There, now the audience can see it.
I'm going to let you turn it.
Look.
Okay. He's holding it up to the microphone.
Do you see the head now?
I see the head. And if you are tuning in, we're talking about Head Trips. That is an exhibit of 34 paintings by Dutch Kepler that were done this past year, filled with all kinds of things, filled with a lifetime of painting. And as he said, he was counting every year while he was here, although doing some amazing things while he was here for that time when he could paint exclusively. And you've been doing that since 2000. You're now Professor Emeritus from UL Lafayette from the art department.
Oh, I don't know about the Emeritus
part. All right,
part.
Well, I'm going to give that to you.
I did a video for Open Channel one time and produced. The producer was Beatnik Emeritus.
All right. Well, I know you said there was an emeritus in this exhibit as well, so or the last exhibit with one of those heads. Well, retired for 13 years now, painting joyous paintings, and I know that every time there is a new set, there are people so happy that you are painting and that you do that full time and that they get to see it in an exhibit like they will this Saturday. So are they all hung now? Are they up in the gallery?
Yes, they are.
And are you pleased with the way they all
great.
Look together?
Yeah. Real happy. Mm-hmm. Well, Donald knows what he's doing, that's for sure.
More or less.
Oh.
Well, I know people are curious. What is your life painting now? Describe your days, how you paint, what your schedule is.
Well, the cats wake me up in the morning. We have four wonderful little cats. And so Joy's been sleeping later than me because she works in the yard a lot. I don't do any yard work. But feed the cats, make the coffee, watch the news. And then I'm the one that usually runs the errands, like go to the pharmacies and the grocery store and do this and that. And then I come back, and whatever time's left, I just go to the studio and paint. And while I'm waiting for paint to dry out, I'm trying to learn Facebook computers in my studio. And actually what I'm realizing is that I'm as socially inept on Facebook as I am in real life.
Now you have people rushing to your Facebook page.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. to many of you, I'm sorry.
But we also have to say that you have this amazing space where your studio is. You have water near your studio. You're out in the country. Mm-hmm. So it is a lovely space to be and to work. Mm-hmm. You find it still nurtures you, that space where you are?
Go stand on the deck outside the studio and fish for bass. And, mm-hmm. You know, then wave at Joy while she's weed-eating the levee, you know, and then bring Joy some water while she's, you know, doing this and that.
Well, it sounds like a joyous life, and I can see why you can see all of that in these wonderful colors and paintings. So if you found yourself intrigued by Dutch's words here, you have not seen his work, this is a great opportunity to see it. If you've known him for many, many years and are just so happy to have this opportunity to see another set of paintings, that will be this Saturday during Second Saturday Art Walk. What are the hours, Don?
6 to 9 in the evening, and the exhibition will run through November 1st.
Okay. So we have a little while to see that. Don't put it off. Saturday Art Walk is a great time to see it. You'll be there, Dutch?
Sure.
For the opening?
Sure, I'll be there.
Okay.
On my crutches. And
no.
I'm 70 years old. I cannot believe it.
Well, we're expecting a lot more cycles of paintings out of you. But so you can go and talk with Dutch about his work. If you haven't seen him in a while, you're a former student, great opportunity to chat with him as well and share some memories of classes and see his new work. This Saturday, Gallery 549, or as Dutch says, it's at Donald's place. all are welcome, and as with all the galleries, it's free and open. Well, Dutch, thank you so much for coming by, leaving your wonderful space out there in the country and coming by to talk with us and tell us more about your work. We appreciate it. My guest, Donald LeBlanc, who has Gallery 549 and artist Dutch Kepler. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.